the court, this is always awkward the few times this has happened where the appellant's attorney, for whatever reason, doesn't argue. I mean, nor it deprives me of my normal opening of expressing incredulity into what I've just heard, but what I propose to do is just to maybe offer 2 or 3 minutes of just sort of the most major points I would want to make, and if that generates any questions from the court, or if it has questions otherwise, I'll go from there. First, I would say that this argument relating to this the victim in this case, that's important to note, the victim, not some other witness, Ms. Harris, I think her last name was, had been declared an adverse witness, I submit that the argument is either entirely or mostly defaulted. When the Commonwealth sought to have her declared an adverse witness, the sole objection by the defense was that up to then she'd been quote-unquote cooperative and quote-unquote open and honest during the testimony. When the judge allowed her to be examined as an adverse witness on the ground of surprise, the defense didn't say a word about that. From that point forward, in the entire remainder of her testimony by either side and to some degree by the judge, there was never an objection of any description, such as, well, even though she's been declared an adverse witness, you have to go through certain evidentiary foundational requirements, which you haven't done. Nothing. So we're limited to this assertion that she'd been cooperative and open and honest. I submit that that doesn't preserve any of the arguments on appeal. Certainly at most, being very charitable to the defendant, it might authorize review of the claim that the Commonwealth hadn't been surprised by Harris's testimony. Next, I'd point out that a trial court has, the case law makes clear, trial court has substantial latitude regarding the manner of examination of witnesses, and specifically as to whether a witness is hostile, that's reviewable as an abuse of discretion. The Supreme Court of Virginia's decision in the capital murder case, Telegu's, so indicates, and it explained in that case the reason for that abuse of discretion standard is because the trial court, unlike the appellate court, sees the witness in person, is much better situated to determine whether, in fact, that witness is hostile. I'd also note, and I think this is a good case to invoke that principle, the trend in Virginia has been to relax strict rules of evidence in developing, quote-unquote, the whole truth. And this is a good case to apply that that principle, because there are several things quite apparent here.
Mr. Anderson, I'd like to focus you on something, and that is the cases, both civil and criminal, dating back a good while, refer to surprise as testimony being injurious to the case. And it seems to me that injurious to the case, if given an ordinary English meaning, certainly applies to the testimony here that surprised, that quote, surprised the Commonwealth. But our cases and the Supreme Court's older cases on injurious seems to import something more than just it really hurt what I was trying to prove, which would be the normal definition of injurious. With the streetcar cases and things like that, it says if the testimony is of a negative component, it is not injurious, it's just not helpful. Where do we stand with that? How do I make sense of cases that may not be reconcilable?
Well, first of all, to state the obvious, you have to look at the cases in their entirety. I think you reconcile them as best you can. But, for example, I've cited, I think it's a case from this court, the Wells case, 32 Virginia Avenue, case from here, where the witness was properly held to have been properly declared an adverse witness because she gave, quote-unquote, partially inconsistent trial testimony on, quote, issues relevant to the Commonwealth's case. I certainly think that's essentially what we have here.
Do you agree that if you research the issue in toto, there are cases that seem to say that wouldn't be enough?
Well, there's certainly some of the cases I think are more problematical for me than others. I certainly would also agree that they are the older cases, but I think in the main, in terms of surprise, it's not like I just can't believe what I'm hearing. Although I will say here, apparently the testimony of this witness at the preliminary hearing was quite a bit different than her testimony in the initial stages of her trial. It's worth pointing out, by the way, that in the closing argument, I don't think it was a motion to strike. It was either motion to strike, but I think it was a closing argument. Defense counsel said that Harris's testimony was not credible because what she said at the initial part of the trial was so different than what she said later. So that certainly suggests some basis for declaring her adverse. I'd also point out, Judge Russell, that few, if any, of these other cases involve the victim of a case being declared adverse. They normally involve different witnesses. I mean, a victim would be at the apex of people who, if they change their account, that's potentially ruinous to, in this case, the Commonwealth.
It's the Commonwealth's position that the change in testimony that led to the request to the hospital was injurious to the Commonwealth's case.
It certainly, if you look at what she said, and it, in some ways this case doesn't fit in some neat little pigeonhole, and I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying that if you look at Harris's testimony on direct that it was just an unmitigated disaster for the Commonwealth, because it was not. Clearly, you could pick some portions of it that were helpful to the Commonwealth. The problem is it was, to some degree, all over the lot. And I think on cross-examination, before she was declared an adverse witness, she said she agreed with the defense that about the only thing she could say for sure was that this co-defendant Gleaves had shot her. That's an awfully weak case coming from the victim of the account. But
given that if I understood the answer, the Commonwealth does believe that the change in testimony was injurious to the Commonwealth's case, how then do I reconcile that the testimony was so injurious as to trigger surprise and hostile witness with the Commonwealth's argument that it was harmless error if it was error?
Well, I think, again, I think to some degree when I wrote the brief, I'm aware that at least to some degree they seem somewhat at odds, which gets back to the point I was trying to make, that this case doesn't, in some ways, does not fit into convenient little pigeonholes, and that's why this the Virginia cases, including, I think, this death penalty case, Williams, was a fairly recent decision, talking about the trend in Virginia is to relax strict rules of evidence. If ever there's a case where it cries out for its application, this is it. Because here you have this victim, again, not a witness, but this victim coming there, and it's clear she doesn't want to be there. And she, early on in her direct examination, says, "No comment. I don't want to talk about that." She starts crying.
What, if any, role from the record did the trial court's decision that she was being somehow threatened by people in the courtroom and the need to clear the courtroom to allow her to testify without the public there, what, if any, role did that play in the trial court's decision to make her, to declare her hostile?
I think she had already been declared hostile by the time that the courtroom was cleared. But I think if you accept my premise
Does that fact alone provide a sufficient basis for declaring her hostile?
In terms of the nitty-gritty normal issues of whether someone's adverse or not, that is a factor the court can consider. But again, if you look at this in what I think is the appropriate light, it begs for this application of the strict rules of evidence in appropriate cases being relaxed in order to ascertain the whole truth. She starts out, she clearly doesn't want to be there. She says, no comment, I don't want to talk about this, that. She starts crying. And her testimony, at least initially, is hardly some 10-strike gold for the Commonwealth. It's at best a mixed bag from the victim of the crime, who's got this permanent limp from having been shot. She's then declared an adverse witness. And then after that, when both attorneys, not just the judge or the Commonwealth attorney, but defense counsel as well, the judge says, wait a minute, let's stop this for the moment. Both attorneys talk with the victim slash witness, and then the court says back on the record that both counsel have concluded that she's, in so many words, intimidated by the presence of the girlfriend or wife of the co-defendant, who's sitting there prominently in court. And apparently there was another person sitting next to that woman who Harris recognized. And then the courtroom's cleared. And then it's like the sky's clear. And her testimony becomes much more forthcoming, much more consistently and overtly inculpatory as to the defendant. It's quite clear. And she says in her testimony that, I still live in the neighborhood. I'm worried about myself. I'm worried about my little sister and what might happen to us. Now, we have two choices. We can either look at just the technical niceties of examination, declaring an examination of an adverse witness, or we can look at what was happening here. And I submit under cases, the Supreme Court of Virginia's decision in Williams, that this is a case in which strict rules of evidence should give way to what are the realities underlying this woman's testimony and what happened once these impediments were removed. Once they were removed, she gave what plainly was the strongest account of this defendant's guilt. Now, we can either say, well, you didn't dot this I, you didn't cross that T, or we can accept what was going on, and quite plainly was going on, and the trial judge said on the record that both attorneys, including defense counsel, had concluded that she was not comfortable testifying in front of this co-defendant's girlfriend. And by the way, she also said that the brother, I think there was a pre-sentence report indicating that the brother was a member of the Blood Gang rather than of the Rotary Club, and that the brother had offered her $1,000 not to come to court. So she is coming there, figuratively speaking, dodging bullets after literally dodging them, or not in one case, not dodging them. So that's the reality here.
Mr. Anderson, so the bottom line is, your position is that taking the totality of the circumstances, the fear of the victim, which is apparent from the record, is sufficient for a declaration that she's an adverse witness.
Well, yes, I think the judge referred to, in declaring her an adverse witness, referred to her intimidation. And I think there are cases that use the word intimidation. I mean, I think to be legally speaking an adverse witness, it's by no means restricted to, I don't like you, and therefore I'm not going to say something. If you are scared to death so that you don't give the account that you've given previously, and the fear is what's keeping you from giving that same fully robust inculpatory account, I think that is sufficient to have you cross-examined as an adverse witness.
Could the same result have been obtained by clearing the courtroom without declaring her adverse? If the judge had cleared the courtroom, does the record reflect that the same result would have occurred?
Well, it's certainly, I don't really see why not. I mean, if she was fearful of one or two of the people in the courtroom, and the courtroom is cleared, then those two people are no longer there. All I can say on that score, Your Honor, is we're getting very far afield from the one very limited objection that this defendant ever articulated, which is, well, she seems forthcoming and honest to me. I think that's a very slender reed upon which to base any appellate evidentiary objection, much less the ones here. So I don't think the claim is reviewable because of the default. I think that under all the circumstances, she was properly examined as an adverse witness, and even if there were some technical questions about that, that for the reasons I've indicated, the examination was proper and, in fact, helped to bring out the whole truth. And I'd ask the court to affirm.
Thank you.